Hi, this is Lori, your host of Happiness Hangout, a space to come and elevate your happiness levels. You, me, and our guests will discuss and help you apply happiness to all aspects of your life, even if you're already happy. Get your daily boost of information to help you feel your best. Hi, everybody. This is Lori Peters with the Happiness Hangout. So glad to be with you again for a wonderful show on happiness and relationships. And as usual, we do talk about that area of happiness and relationships. And we have experts on our show every week to get into some lively and interesting conversation from various perspectives. So right now, I want to tell you a little bit about our guest today. His name is Glenn Ambrose. He's the owner of Life Enhancement Services, a life coaching company based on the belief that happiness and fulfillment are there for you to have and is attainable by anybody. He's a life coach, host of the podcast Life Lessons in Laughter with Glenn Ambrose, inspirational speaker, spiritual advisor, and addiction specialist. Combining his international coaching certification with his finely tuned style of getting to the heart of the matter, he inspires change that is necessary for a life of connected fulfillment. Glenn Ambrose, welcome to the Happiness Hangout.
Thank you.
So glad to have you today. So you know, we're going to be talking about relationships from your perspective, and I'm sure we're going to get into a wonderful conversation about that. So I'd like to start off and just dive right into it. I'm going to ask you to start off with something kind of a big picture question. And I'm going to ask you, what is love to you? How do you define love?
Love is really the core. That is when, you know, I do like to get to the heart of the matter. So if you strip away everything else that we think that there is, at the end of that is love. And what I mean by that is if you take all good emotions and good feelings and good things and you get down to the core of those, you're going to find that they're all based in love. Happiness, joy, bliss, excitement. All those things are based out of love. And then to go to the other side, you've got fear. And everything negative is a form of fear. You know, anger, jealousy, depression. All of that is an aspect of fear. So if you get to that point, now you're left with love and fear as the basis for basically everything that we experience. So if you take that one step further, the final step, and you look at fear and say, okay, what is fear? Well, fear is just absence of love. And the way I demonstrate that is by using light as an example. If you have a dark room and then all of a sudden you bring a light in, there's no fight, there's no battle, there's no struggle, it's just now light. So darkness isn't really a thing, it's just absence of light. Just like fear isn't a thing, it's just absence of love. So that's how I define love. When you really get down to the core, it's the basis of everything. We either have love or we have an absence of it. So the only thing actually there is love.
You know, that's interesting you say that because, you know, in all my research and reading over all these years, you know, and I do teach counseling, you know, at my local college. And I say, and it's funny how the students just nod when I say this. I say, you know, anything anybody goes through that's negative, if you look deep down, no matter how it's coming out to the world, it is usually just based on fear. Anger is considered the most powerful emotion in the way we teach about that piece in our course, in my class that I do, Principles of Interviewing and Counseling. And we talk about anger being the most powerful, but whether you're angry or whether you're sad or whether you're distraught or whatever negative emotion, what you're going through normally, if you really take a hard look at it, it is really, really based on fear that you have. So that's pretty powerful. If you can take fear and say the opposite of it, you know, if you take fear out of it, you have love. I mean, just a way to, just people looking at things different ways is fascinating, because you can really open up someone's mind by saying, like you said, the issue is just lack of love. If you just do the opposite of it, you have love. So whatever you have, just do the opposite.
Right. And that's why it's such a powerful way to, if we look at all these different, you know, all the problems in the world and all the situations that go in our own personal lives, and we're constantly going, how do I deal with this? What do I need to do to fix this? You know, what's the answer to this? Well, if the answer is love, if you're having a problem, the solution is love, because a problem is fear-based. So that means there's a lack of love. So if I bring love into it, then there will be no more lack of love, and then there will be no more fear. Therefore, there will be no more problem.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And people have to, you know, the thing about that, I'm interested here, you know, having this conversation today, we do talk about, I mostly talk about romantic relationships, partnerships and romantic relationships. But, you know, we're having an issue right now. I'm having an issue in my world, not personally, but things around me, there are issues. And people have to let their guard down to let love in, though. That's the thing. Like, I've learned over the years, I used to be very tight to the cuff, very held things in. That was an issue of self-esteem that I worked out many years ago. That's been worked out and dealt with. But you have to let your guard down, even if you are a person who is very loving and you get, you know, really on your high horse about something, and right. and you have to let that guard down to let love in. Sometimes that's what people have to hear. I think if you're okay with not being, even if you're right, if you're okay with letting your guard down and you don't have to be right, you just want it to work, whatever it is, then that's that love. When you allow somebody who was strong to be vulnerable around you and let that all loose. And I'm not giving specifics here, but I keep thinking about people's guards being up, you know?
Yes. Yes, I think there is a lot of that right now. And you touched on it beautifully. It's the vulnerability. You know, it's Brené Brown did wonderful work on the topic of vulnerability, and that when you really get down to it, you know, vulnerability is... our perception of vulnerability is that we have to open up ourselves and take a chance on getting hurt. But true vulnerability is opening ourselves up fully and finding out that we can't be hurt. You know, nobody can hurt us. We're eternal beings. Nobody can hurt us technically. They can hurt our ego, you know, and by ego, I mean mind-made self, not ego in the old format, but just who we think we are. You know, somebody can hurt our sense of who we think we are, but they can't actually hurt us. They can't, you know, they can't take us away from ourselves. They can't diminish ourselves. So when we fully open up and expose ourselves, and then all of a sudden somebody says, I don't like that. And you go, well, you find out that it's okay that they don't like that. It's not important if they like it. It's important that you're just being you. So it doesn't matter if they like it or if they don't like it, because the whole goal is for you to be you, you know? And then, so you find out when you really, you know, go deep with vulnerability that, you know, you can't be hurt, which spins over to your other point that you made so nicely, is, which I think is two sides of the same coin, is that what would you rather be? Would you rather be right, or would you rather be happy? You know, that's an important aspect of that too. I think that's kind of the bridge that gaps these deep thoughts, because we are talking about very deep thoughts. So sometimes we need a bridge to get there. And a lot of times people can understand, like, would you rather be right or rather be happy? They can, with a little bit of work, they can grasp that concept. And then from there, they might be able to jump over to the, okay, I'm ready to open up and be vulnerable and find out that I actually can't be hurt.
You know, there's a couple of things that you said. First of all, dealing with the ego. Especially, you know, I, like I said, I've had to come from self-esteem issues through my life to the point where I really do love myself and all my flaws and know I'm not perfect. And that's okay. Because when you realize that you're human and that you're not supposed to be perfect, sure, you're going to try to do your best. Of course. But at the same time, letting your ego down, it's interesting how it works, because when I find when you let your ego down and you let people come in and you say, who cares? You know, let's let them in. The right people will show up and will treat you like gold, so to speak. Or, and if they don't, you have to be strong enough to be able to say, you know what? I know I'm flawed. I know I'm human, but I like me. And I have to be okay that I really care about this person and they don't care about me. And I've got to be strong enough to let it go. That's in relationships sometimes the hardest part to do. So that's the first thing I'm bringing up, is that ego and working. The ego is so powerful.
It is. Oh. It is. And, you know, I think one of the core problems that, or no, I shouldn't say problems, but where we are in a lot of the teaching, I see the teaching about this type of subject, you know, love, relationships, all that, I see it advancing very quickly. And I think where we are right now is some people are still kind of caught in the, I have to fight my ego is bad mentality, where just because we don't want to be run by our ego doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. You know, it's just, we don't want to be identified with our ego. You know, it's not that. I believe that our walk here is more integration with our humanness with our spirituality. So if I'm sitting there going, oh, I have to get rid of my ego, I have to get rid of my mind-made self, then all of a sudden I've created a struggle within myself and a battle. And if there's a struggle or a fight, then I'm putting energy towards it. And generally what happens is, you know, whenever we put energy towards something, it expands. So if I declare right. war on my ego, I'm expanding my ego, you know?
Right.
So instead of doing that, you know, what I try to teach my clients is that it's not a war. It's just, we have to learn to not identify with it, not to think, oh, that's me. When my ego says something, when somebody hurts my feelings and I go, oh, they hurt me. No, they didn't hurt me. They hurt my ego. So they hurt my mind-made sense of self. So I can see that for what it is. And then all of a sudden, I'm a lot freer. I can say, well, okay, they took a shot at my mind-made sense of self, but I know that that's not me. I'm deeper than that. So I'm okay. And, you know, now all of a sudden I don't take it personally, and it's a lot more manageable of a situation.
I can understand that. And what do you think, though? The second question that hit me is, what do you think about when someone says they took a shot at my ego, but because we're flawed and not perfect and not supposed to be perfect, what if we're hit with something that really is bad on our part? In other words, let's say you've got somebody who is verbally abusive and he has a partner. And let's say if they're in a heterosexual relationship, she is done because this person has an issue that is, he's very mentally, or she is very mentally abusive. How do we deal with people who we can say, it's not me, it's my ego. But what if we're doing things that really aren't helpful or good for the world? How do we deal with, does the person have to just come to the point where they realize that? Do you help the person come to that point? I mean, it's up to the person, I know. But what if you run into that where this person really, it's not just about, I don't find you attractive. That's all subjective. It's not about, you know, I don't like the fact that, you know, you have kids and I don't want to be with someone with kids. That's just a life choice. What if it's something truly about how a person, you know, is, that is detrimental to themselves and other people? Do you have any kind of advice on, because there are people like that who are doing those things and may need to clean those up for real.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, one thing that whenever I'm talking about this subject, it usually, this is something that usually comes up, and I usually So, you know, to clarify right off the top, anybody that's in a mentally, emotionally, or physically abusive situation, especially, you know, physical, of course, there are situations like that where you just need to get yourself out of the situation because it's dangerous, you know, period. Now, you know, that's in the extreme situations. So with that kind of caveat of, you know, if something's serious, you need to get out because you're not safe. Then we kind of take it down a notch and go to kind of the more acceptable mental or emotional abuse where, you know, it's not constant, it's not dangerous, it's just kind of not healthy for growth. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not the optimum relationship situation. In those situations, generally what I recommend doing, unless somebody has the you know, the financial and means to kind of just leave and they're ready to leave, then fine. If you know it's not for you and you're ready to do it, then leave. But if somebody's in that situation, they're struggling a little bit, then I always turn the fingers back on them. Work on yourself. Work on your self-love, work on your issues, because, and it's not to deny that the other person's behaviors aren't good. The reason I do that is because as somebody who has good self-esteem is not in a verbally abusive situation.
Yes, right.
They're just not, because they won't put up with it, because they love themselves too much, you know? So, you know, in those situations, if somebody's torn, oh, I don't know if I should leave them, I'm not sure if I should. Okay, just work on yourself, work on yourself, work on yourself. Because as your self-esteem rises, every time he's verbally abusive, it's going to annoy you more and more because you're just not willing to take it anymore. And then what happens is you get to the point when you're ready to leave, and it's not a inner pulling within you going, oh, this is so much turmoil. I want to leave, but I really love him. And part of me wants to stay. And you don't go through all that. You just love yourself so much that you realize, you know what? I shouldn't be in this. And it's very clear cut. You don't go through that emotional tug of war. You just sit there and you go, there's no way I'm putting up with this any longer. I'm out of here. And you feel good about your decision, you're confident in your decision, and it makes that move that much easier.
See, I never realized that as a younger person. I watched
people me neither.
I was in awe of people doing it, and I would sort of gravitate towards those kind of people because it was so amazing how they could do that, and I didn't get it. But once I worked and came to the other side of it, you know what's interesting? It doesn't matter if I gain or lose 10 or 15 pounds. It doesn't matter if I look good in the morning or don't. It doesn't matter. I am still who I am. And when you're confident of that, it's so interesting how people gravitate towards it. Because everybody wants that, I think. Everybody wants to be around that. I mean, I'm getting married for the first time, Glenn. And I've been in long-term relationships. Thank you. And I've been in long-term relationships many, many times with people I shouldn't have been with, but they were great learning experiences. I can look back on it now and say, I'm so glad it all happened. But the bottom line is, my fiance cannot fathom how I was that other person. And because I'm writing a book on it, I have to let him in on it because he's going to read it anyway. You know, that this is who I was. He can't see it because, of course, I'm here now. You're here now. And when you get there, you can't even envision it. So that's something that you're so right. And there's so many ways to do that. In terms of, I think self-esteem is everything. And that's one of the messages that I put out there in the Happiness Hangout is that raising the self-esteem. I did it through a lot of reading. I did it through a lot of observing others who I wanted to be like. What did they do? And I would envision people that work with you or have those problems. It is so much the key. If you solve that, everything starts to fall into place, whether it's work, whether it's relationships, whether it's what's going on in your life, family issues, friends. When you gain more self-esteem, everything else works out. If people would really just understand that.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you. And it's the, you know, it's really holding yourself you know, with good self-esteem, it something that you said that the people that you attract, what's interesting too is you attract healthier people. You know, they, because technically, you know, we're getting into the vibrational aspect, we're vibrating at a higher level. So what, you know, we're attracting healthier people, and people who are unhealthy don't like to be around healthy people as a general rule. And I'm talking if they're way out of whack and they have no interest in changing. You know, I mean, if somebody is a little unhealthy, but they're trying to better themselves, then they might be drawn to somebody healthier than themselves. But people who are really stuck in negative behavior patterns and aren't interested in changing, they can't stand to be around me. I mean, I make their skin crawl. They see, I've literally had people that were working with me and they were not ready to do the work. And they're like, nope, I'm not doing it. They disappeared. I never heard from them. And then all of a sudden, I look out a window and see one of them coming into a restaurant. And I kind of looked away because I didn't want to make them feel uncomfortable. And then all of a sudden I looked up and I noticed they never came in. And I looked out and they're bolting towards their car. They saw me in there. And what I represented was truth. I represented the work that they were incapable of doing at that time. And it made them very so uncomfortable. They didn't even want to be in the same restaurant as me.
You represent the next step when they're ready. That's
exactly
what you're
right, you know? Exactly. And they weren't ready, so they didn't want to be around me. You know, but the beauty of it is I like being in that position because, one, I don't have to deal with negative people because I just repel them. So that's beautiful because I don't really want them in my life anyway. And then the other nice part about it is when they are ready, they know exactly who to go to. Like that person that I just told you about, 6 months later, I got a phone call and he told me that he avoided me. And he told me it was because
you said, I know. Right. Yeah. I saw you.
And he also said, I knew exactly who to call when I knew I was ready. I didn't think about it. I picked up the phone and called you because I knew that you were the one to call when I was ready. And, you know, that's the beauty of it. We don't have to try to change people who aren't ready. Just if we just shine the light bright and let them know that we're here, then all of a sudden, you know, when they are ready, they come.
Well, I don't think we ever should, obviously. And it's funny, I've got some close people in my life who, you know, aren't at that place yet. Long-term friends who, you know, and I made a commitment to myself. I will never hold back. But at the same time, I don't have the same conversations with them as I even might you, who I, you know, you and I don't know each other in person. We don't live in the same place even, but we can connect on this level because of our work and where we've come from. But I don't go there because I know they're not ready. And it's interesting to, when you have those people in your life, because you got to figure out, I want these people in my life. At the same time, they're not where I am. So that's kind of an interesting balance to have.
Yes, we do have to meet people where they are, you know, and it's that can be when it's family and people close to us. It can be a little challenging because we don't want to try to change people. Everybody has their own path. But when it's, you know, when it's people that are kind of interchangeable a little bit, you know, where we don't need to have them in our lives, then it's a little bit easier, of course, you know, because they just kind of move in and move out. And again, if we're working on our self-esteem, it's not that big of a problem. You know, like if I'm sitting there hanging out with somebody for a while and then all of a sudden they don't return a couple phone calls, if my self-esteem is okay, I'm not taking it personally. I'm not distraught. I'm not hurt by it. I'm just going, well, there must be something going on with them. You know, I might take a moment and look back and see if I did anything that could have offended them. I might reach out one more time and even ask. You know, if I'm confused by the situation. But sometimes people come in and out of our lives at different times. And, you know, as long as our self-esteem is strong, then we're not taking it personally, which is, you know, something you said earlier. It's raising that self-esteem and everything else falls into place kind of magically.
Well, think how much your self-esteem can take a hit when you're dating. I mean, you know, it is never going to be easy for someone to reject another person. If you're that person being rejected, let's say, you know, that never feels good. But the higher your self-esteem is, the more that you realize. I'll never forget when I watched Sex in the City and Miranda said, he's just not that into me. That's all it is. It's not me personally. It's just, and then I read the book, Greg, I can't think of his last name, wrote the book and he wrote a second book. And really it opened my eyes to go, wait a minute, I'm just not that person's type. Why do I take everything so personally? It's because my self-esteem is low. I mean, it kept coming back to that. So when you're dating and someone doesn't call you, even if it's your business, I don't know what you were referring to, but if it is a, let's say it's not a business thing, it's a relationship thing, to try to say, okay, he didn't call, or I called her and she didn't call back or whatever, or I left a text or whatever, to say, okay, it's so easy to take it personally. It is hard not to, because you put yourself out there who, you know, if you're being real and being who you are and getting rejected, that's hard either way. So you got to have some high self-esteem to deal with that, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. It is. It is hard. And, you know, I think one of the reasons that it is so hard is because we pull our problems so close to ourselves when we're in the middle of them. You know, like if you were to take a group of people, like one of your classes, and say, okay, who here thinks that everybody that gets to meet you should think that you are wonderful and want to spend the rest of their lives with you? Nobody thinks that. You know, you could pull the whole class and nobody would be like, oh, of course, everybody is supposed to fall in love with me and want to spend the rest of their life with me if they meet me. Everybody would do that. No, nobody thinks that way. But then all of a sudden they meet somebody and they, you know, they feel that rejection come and then they take it personally. It's like, well, why do we do that? You know, we have to take a lot. Oftentimes we need to take a step back from our problems and put some distance between us and the situation that's happening and understand, you know, put it in a bigger perspective and go, oh yeah, that's right. Some people don't like me. You know, it's just, there's bound to be people. You know, I've been doing my podcast for 3 years and I know, like, I have my podcast on Insight Timer and thousands of people listen to it all around the globe. And every once in a while, I'll get a negative feedback. No, I'm blessed. I don't get that many of them. But sometimes I'll get a negative feedback. It's like, oh, my first thought is, oh, that I don't click with that person. That person probably shouldn't be listening to any more of my podcasts because I'm not their cup of tea. Yeah.
That's all it is. I mean, that's all it is.
Right.
Especially when you know you're doing good work. You know, you're making me laugh. I did an article and I was excited. It got syndicated by Huffington Post and it got almost 5,000 likes, which is decent. You know, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
And I had this guy, it was about 10 things you should never, 10 things that you have to do before you marry him. And I'm putting these 10 things down. And this guy wrote a very smart aleck comment back, like about money. I didn't say anything about money. I said, listen, you're going to have a job. We're ready to contribute too as women, but you're going to have to work too. Like, you know, it was, and he right. Of course took the whole thing as money grubbing women out there who want to find a guy to do everything for them, blah, blah. Listen, my fiance does everything for me. I treat him like a king. You know, it's a two-way street. If it isn't, you better get out. So.
And that's his defensiveness coming up.
Yes. And, you know, I read it and old Lori, I like to call it old Lori. I do that a lot. Old Lori would have been like devastated that somebody would have taken it that way. You know, Lori, who knows better, I kind of laughed and I said, step away from the computer. Just walk away. That's just, you're dealing with the world here. People are going to all be coming from different mindsets with different philosophies, and they're all different in where their growth is and what they think. Let it go. And luckily it was only one, but it's funny. I'll read articles. I will always get a comment from a guy who says something that I just kind of nod my head and go, geez, that's not what I meant, you know, but they're in their own headspace and they're going to interpret it the way they interpret it.
Right. And they have to, you know, we take it like he has to interpret things from his perspective, because that's the only perspective he has. You know, and I think that that's why it's one of the most important lessons that we can learn in our lives, is to make, give people space to be who they are. You know, it's okay. It's okay that, you know, this guy might have been defensive in that comment. It's okay that, you know, but it is funny. Like a lot of times you can see, or you think you can see, you never know for sure, but you think you can draw the line sometimes. Like my podcast is Life Lessons and Laughter. And oftentimes, or, you know, like I said, fortunately, I'm not getting that many negative comments. But sometimes in the negative comments, they'll make a comment about like there was that they shouldn't have taken a serious subject and laughed, or it was silly or something like that. And I'm thinking like, well, laughter is literally in the name of the podcast. You know?
Yeah.
So if you're looking for a very serious talk on life lessons, don't pick Life Lessons and Laughter. You know, pick Life Lessons and Laughter if you want to, you know, talk about serious subjects and learn, but do it in a fun way, you know, because that's what's in the title. You know, so it's kind of common, but we do, you know, I heard it said, it might've been Eckhart Tolle who said it this way. I'm not positive, but he said that he read an article somewhere and they were talking about the Middle East. And they said that the problem in the Middle East has always been the refusal to make room for a comparing narrative. So that I think is such a big problem.
Powerful.
Yeah, it's such a big problem in our world. We refuse to make room for comparing narratives. And if we just, when somebody says, you know what, Glenn shouldn't laugh during his podcast. Now, if I say, well, yes, I should. And blah, 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 no, it's okay. You know, now I can sit over here and go, well, it's in the title. Maybe you shouldn't have listened. But if I were confronted with them, I wouldn't argue with them over it. I'd be like, you are 100% right. You know, that's fine. I understand what you're saying. I don't agree with it, but I understand what you're saying and I can make room for it. I can understand somebody thinks that you shouldn't laugh at certain things. I can get that, you know, I don't happen to share it, but I can get it, you know? So I think that's something that I work with my clients a lot with, is because as we grow, oftentimes the first thing, you know, relationship wise, or just personally and with our self-esteem, once we start finding the truth, like if you see a good movie, everybody gets all excited and wants to tell somebody about a good movie, right? Well, what happens if you found the secret to happiness? That's a heck of a lot better than a movie. So you want to tell everybody, and you want everybody to act like you're acting because you found the key to happiness and it's so exciting. And we have to make room for comparing narratives. We have to understand that people aren't all in the same place and give them room to just be where they are. And if we can do that, it brings a lot more peace into our lives.
Well, you're right, because who wouldn't, you know, my business is called the Happiness Hangout. I mean, I write about happiness and well-being, but now I've taken that to a level where I focus more intently on relationships. And I have come to accept that too. And I think our listeners would understand that you have to accept people. I love how you say that, where they are. And I've had to step back and do the same thing and go, you know, it's okay. Everyone's on their own journey. They are where they're supposed to be. You have to trust that, because there's no other place they could be but where they are. So how could you fight that? You shouldn't. And I'm very thankful that I am where I am and that I've come this far in my journey. And, you know, I want to bring up humor, because you know, when I talk about, when I do my articles, I write for Your Tango magazine, and then I get syndicated out, and I'm also a blogger on Huffington Post. And when I write all my articles around, with the tone of humor, because that's who I am. You have to have a voice, right? I mean, I'm sure you write too, wherever it is, your blog, magazines, whatever. When you write with your voice. And for me, humor is everything. It permeates in my life. And someone asked me once, what is your mission in life? And I said, to make people laugh. And then, of course, I've gone deeper with that. But I think humor in relationships and, like you say, laughter, like I would resonate right towards that. I would be like, okay, I'm signing up for that because that's part of who I am. So talk to me a little bit about the laughter part of your business, or what you think about humor in relationships or humor in general, because again, I resonate with that. And I think a lot of people do, because it lightens. It doesn't have to say this isn't serious, but it can lighten a mood so you can open up. So what are your thoughts around all that?
Well, humor has always been a big part of my life. It's just, you know, when I was younger, it was my coping mechanism, and it was, you know, how I fit in. And I got class clown all the way through school, you know, like all the way, like elementary, junior high, high school, you know. So it was definitely a large part of my personality. And when I woke up spiritually, there was a, you know, there was a little fear. Like, am I going to lose my personality? Who am I going to be if I let go of who I think I am? And, you know, of course, once I got on the other side, I found out that it just enhances it. It enhances every aspect of you. So you know, you don't lose your sense of humor. It just heightens it. And it's I think that humor is very important, because not only does, I mean, really, why are we doing the work? You know, why are we doing the spiritual work? Why are we working on our relationships? Why are we working on ourselves? Why are we raising our self-esteem? Why are we doing any of this? It's to enjoy ourselves. I mean, I don't want to get to a point where I can, like, my goal on my own self-work is not to be able to sit and have a four-hour boring conversation with somebody. You know, it's to enjoy my life, and enjoyment, laughter comes with that. So it's, you know, I think that that's such an important aspect of, you know, why are we doing the work in the first place? It's to have fun and to be happy and to enjoy it and to laugh and be filled with joy. And, you know, so that's part of it. And then the other aspect that was coming to me as you were talking was the, how important it is with our own work. Like, oftentimes I'll have my clients follow a line, you know, like if something's troubling them or they have fear about something, follow that thought all the way through to its conclusion, because fear just kind of lies in the middle there. And when we don't follow it all the way through to its conclusion. So if you follow a thought all the way to its conclusion, generally what you're going to do is you're going to get to a point where it's laughable. Where you're actually start laughing at the problem that you had, because it's ridiculous. You know, you've blown it so far out of proportion that it's just ridiculous. And we start, when we can get to that point and start laughing, that's actual release. That's spiritual work. That's self-esteem building. That is, you know, that's taking a fear that used to control you and literally laughing the energy of that fear right out of your body. So laughter can actually be a spiritual tool, a tool that anybody can use, and people do use, you know, in their situations. It's when you can get yourself to the point where you're laughing about something because of the absurdity of it, or laughing about something just because, like, when you finally realize that you don't have control over a situation, and you start laughing because you're just like, there's literally nothing I can do. This is just ridiculous.
Yep.
When you get to that point, that is so freeing, you know? So laughter can actually be used as a tool in our growth as well.
That's so true. And everyone, we're talking with Glenn Ambrose of Life Enhancement Services. And Glenn, it makes so much sense because, you know, they say this funny thing that everybody thinks they're funny, but not everybody is. And that's true. And I know you're funny. I could tell. And I definitely know I'm funny. Come on. I know I am. People laugh at me all the time. But almost everybody has a sense of humor. And that's where you can, I think, really work with that, in the fact that if they can get to that point where they could release all that muck and garbage that's holding them up, and they can get to where you said, where they're laughing about it, realize there's nothing I can do about this person wanting to be with me. There's nothing I can do about the fact that my job got released because of restructure, or whatever you're discussing that's big. Or my family is who they are. And, you know, I'm lucky enough, I had great parents. Sure, they were flawed, but they were great parents. I'm so lucky. My fiance has a wonderful family that I'm coming into. So, you know, we're lucky in that regard. But I have people around me who struggle, you know, with that area of having to accept the fact that your parents were so flawed, you know, that they couldn't even really, they couldn't take care of your needs. And now you have to step up as an adult and take over. So whatever it is, if you can just say they were who they were, they do the best they can. As Oprah says, they do the best they can with what they have at the time.
Right.
And you just have to say, now I've got to take over. I care about myself enough. I'm not saying that's easy, but that sense of humor in saying, yeah, you know, mom and dad were kind of screwed up. I love them and they love me. But, you know, let's face it. If people have kids at 22 years old, sorry, 22-year-olds who are listening, but you really, like, wisdom takes time.
Right. So, and it's, you know, I agree with you. And I think a lot of times I see, like I said earlier, I see the teachings that we're doing shifting and growing and getting more advanced. And a lot of times with my clients, when I start bringing up childhood things and stuff like that to get back to where, like, belief systems were formed, like maybe like a belief that I'm not good enough, that could be formed between the ages of 4 and 8 years old. So when I start going back to childhood with some of my clients, most often what they do is they're aware that their parents didn't give them what they needed in one way, shape, or form. But they're very oftentimes that's where they stop. They'll go, oh yeah, my parents were messed up. They didn't do this. They didn't do that. They didn't give me that. Or if I start saying it, the first thing they do is they jump in and they go, well, but they didn't know any better.
Yep.
So, like, I think, and we're at that point where a lot of people get it. They get that our parents maybe didn't give us, and I had great parents too, which really made me wonder why the heck I was such a nut for 20 years until I woke up, you know. Yep. But people kind of, we're at that point where it's almost become common knowledge that our parents didn't give us what we needed maybe, but that's where it stops. And I think the next step is so important. It's like, yeah, like when I'm talking, I'm not trying to blame their parents. I know their parents did the best that they could, but yet they still feel the need to defend them and go, oh yeah, but you know, they did the best they could. And I usually say, yeah, of course they did.
Absolutely. I'm glad they realize that. That's good that they know that.
Yeah. And it's wonderful that they did the best that they could, but you didn't get what you needed. What are you doing about that? You know, and that's usually when their mind gets blown, because they're like, oh, I don't know. So that's where your work starts. It's okay to sit there and say, well, it wasn't my parents' fault. Of course it wasn't. They did the best that they could. But the fact is, you didn't get what you needed. That's still a fact. So what are we going to do about that? That's where the real work begins. You know, so just
understand.
You know, so understanding that it's not your parents' fault is a wonderful step, but that's step one. You know, so, you know, we have to make sure they go beyond that and then start working on themselves, you know, again, with, like you said, with their self-esteem and things.
Well, and you know, I'm a child, a young child of the 70s. And then my older teens were in the 80s. And I always joke about this, that like in the 70s, anything went. Like, you didn't wear seatbelts. Your seatbelt was your mom's arm, you know, thrown across you. And you didn't have any padding on your knees or on your head. You stuck your finger in the light socket. You knew not to do it next time. You might have a little finger, take part of a finger amputated, but oh well. You know, I mean, it was the 70s. Yeah. That's and so I think some of us in that age range from 40 to 50 something, sort of, it might have been a little different. I think a lot of parents became more conscientious. And I think it went way the other way. I think we got really picky, like about like, geez, oh man, like the kid's got to be in the back. Like you got to be in the back seat till you're 11. Like I was standing on the front seat when I was 2, and my mother was throwing her arm over me as she was putting on the brake. You know, I mean, it's right. it's a different time thing, and it's more like go with the flow. Generations evolve. But I think sometimes we do take it a little far. I'm just going to throw it out there. But if it's helping our kids feel better about themselves, if there's anything in that, I'll take all the other garbage. I think, you know, I had a good friend of mine, a guy, tell me about 30 years ago. He said, if your parents give you a sense of self-esteem and self-worth, that's all you ever need. He said this 30 years ago. And I agreed with him, but I agreed with him, but I wasn't living it yet. Okay. But that was the first step. And I'll never forget that, because no matter how much money you have, what you can do, if your parents tell you, you know, good things about yourself, not in an egotistical way, but in a healthy, you're a good person, show your right. strengths. I mean, you're kind of set for life, I think. I believe.
I think you're right. And it's, you know, that's kind of been my default as a parent. I mean, my son just turned 16, and it's, you know, as a parent, you don't know what to do. I mean, there's many situations where I I've done a lot of work on myself, and I'm sitting here going, I don't know what to do, you know, and I always defaulted to love. I always just went, you know what, let me just try to handle this with love whenever I could, you know, and I by no means was I perfect with it, but let me at least give him love and let him feel that. And the rest works out, you know, because he is on his own journey and he does need to find, you know, his own way. And there, we're going to disagree on things, and some things he's going to listen to me about, and some things he won't. And it's going to, all that stuff is going to happen. But if I just give him love that he can feel and know that, you know, that's always there, no matter what, no matter if, you know, we're upset and we're disagreeing, to be able to look at him and say, and I did this many times when he was younger. I said, you know, I'd be really upset, and I'd say, do you understand that I love you right this moment just as much as I've ever loved you? Even as wound up as I am, I completely love you right now. I just want you to know that, because I'm in the middle of it.
And how do you respond?
he responded internally. You know, I could feel him receive it. I could see him receive it. He didn't really say the words. Yeah. You know, I got a nod, but there was no verbal response. He knew.
But I hate you, Dad, right now. But I love you too, right? You know, I hate you right now, but not really.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, we can not like the way somebody's behaving, and we can disagree, and we can do all that. But to be able to give somebody the gift of knowing that you can love somebody anyway, that's a big gift, you know, because that does raise self-esteem. Or, you know, another example of that was I explained something that we weren't seeing eye to eye. And I said, you know, at there's certain times in your life as a father, I just need to take the wheel and do what I think is right, because I'm the father and I'm in control, and That's just kind of how it is. So I've tried to explain to you my point of view, and you're not agreeing with me. So we're going to have to agree to disagree on this one, because I can't think of anything else to, any other way to explain it. So, I said, do you believe that I love you? And he said, yes. And I said, okay. I said, so you know that I love you. Do you think that I would ever intentionally do anything to hurt you? And he said, no. I said, okay. So even though you don't agree with what I'm doing, can you at least put faith in the fact that I think that it's the right thing to do for you out of love? And he said, yeah, I think I can do that. I said, okay, then that's all I ask. Right now, I think, in my perspective, out of the love that I have for you, that this is the best decision, and that's why I'm making it. And if you can have faith in that instead of agreeing with my point of view, then we've got something, you know? And he was able to do that, which was really a powerful moment for us.
Wow, how many kids hear it like that? I mean, if more people could do that, oh my gosh, our kids would be in, would just be, it would be glorious for our kids. So that, you know, I really thank you, because you're, you know, our kids of the next generations are the ones making decisions. And I just thank you for being such a good dad and doing that.
Well, wow. You're very welcome. And now you know that I'm only telling you the good stuff, right?
Well, I mean, I know, but you're handling a hard situation in a good way. So, I mean, you know, as long as you're not beating him, I think we're good.
I handled a few in poor ways too, but how is anybody going to learn from that? You know, so
right.
So what I put out the good examples, so right. People can learn from them, including me, because as I talk about it, it reminds me, you know, and then next time a difficult situation that comes up, that's in the forefront of my mind.
Yes, exactly. Because we're not perfect, and that's okay. But, well, you know, we have, I'll tell you something, Glenn, there are several things we have to talk about that we haven't got to. So I think what we need to do is we need to wrap it up for today. We want to talk about you and who you are and how we reach you and what you're doing. And I really believe we need to have a part two of this show.
Absolutely. I'd love to.
There's a lot we haven't gotten to. So we'll set up a part two. Listeners, you know, quite frankly, I have several hundred listeners, and then the rest are on podcasts. It goes out to several different places. So we'll get that out, and then we will have a part two of this show. But for now, tell us about how, you know, what you're doing, how we can reach you, how we can get to your social media and like your stuff. Tell us all about that.
Okay. Well, my website is life-enhancement-services.com. And I'm actually in the midst of changing that, which is my new website's going to be glennambrose.com, which is going to be a lot easier. It's Glenn with two N's. And it's already pointing to the Life Enhancement Services page. So whichever one you use, you go to my website. And that's probably the best way to find out about me, because it's going to point to all the different things I have going on. My work, it's mostly life coaching. I do some small events locally and workshops and things like that. And I work by in person, obviously. I work by Skype. I also work by phone, so location isn't an issue. I can work with anybody anywhere in the world. So that's the main aspect of my business. We mentioned the podcast a couple times. That's Life Lessons and Laughter with Glenn Ambrose, and that's on iTunes. And again, you can find that on my website. Really, that's the main aspect of it. You can find me on Facebook, especially if you're local, because I do have events here in Rhode Island. So, you know, that's one way you can get invited to my events. I'm on Facebook. I also have one other thing I'll mention briefly is a little project I kind of got up and running. It's called The Great Love Project. And if you're interested in love, as we opened the show with, You can kind of take a look at that and see what that's all about too. It's the website is thegreatloveproject.com, and it's just a movement about, as I mentioned earlier, if you want to expand something, you put energy towards it. So if we need more love in this world, which I think everybody can attest to, then we just need to put more love, more energy towards love. And the way this movement is set up is we're using social media to spread things already. And most times we use social media to spread things that we have love for, even if we want to call that version of love like or joy or whatever. It's something we have when we're sharing pictures of our children or our new car or our vacation. It's because we have joy for them. We have a version of love for them. So if you just take a moment and put hashtag the Great Love Project along that, it kind of slows you down and lets you attach love to what you're sending out in social media. And by proxy, it also puts energy towards it and expands the love in this world. So that's the idea behind that project that I have going on as well.
Wonderful. So it's called, tell us what it's called again. I'm actually looking you up right now and liking your page. So what is that called again?
The Great Love Project.
And that is through which venue?
That's you can go right to that website, thegreatloveproject.com.
Okay.
And I have on that page, I have links to all the different social media pages. And if you use the hashtag, you can, if you just hashtag something on your own Facebook page or on your own Twitter or on your own social media, it links, to everybody else that use that same hashtag. So you can click on the hashtag and it'll bring you to all the other people that posted with the hashtag The Great Love Project.
Wonderful. Here it is. TheGreatLoveProject.com. So it's coming straight up. Okay, wonderful. So I've got on there, and hopefully our listeners should go get to Facebook, get to Glenn with two N's, Glenn Ambrose, and go, or you can go to TheGreatLoveProject.com. And Glenn, it's been wonderful having you. I look forward to having you for a part two, which I've, never offered to anybody, but I really think that we're having great conversation and there's a lot more to have. So we'll do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much. And it flew by.
It really did. It will fly by again, I'm sure. So thanks again for being on the Happiness Hangout, Glenn Ambrose of Life Enhancement Services. Thanks, Glenn.
Thank you, Lori.
Okay, I'd like to thank my sponsors, AirServe of Mentor and AirServe of Strongsville, Residential and Commercial Heating and Cooling Company in Cleveland, Ohio, and the East and West Side, veteran-owned, providing the best warranties and guarantees and best finance in the business, www.airserve.com. That's AIRESERV.com. Humanity Thriving Out Loud. Read The Magic Happens magazine at www.themagichappensnow.com. Also, please go over to my Facebook page and go to Happiness Hangout, like my page, and you will get a free resource on relationships and how to use gratitude in relationships. Again, like my page over at Happiness Hangout. Just Google it or just put it up on Facebook. Go to Happiness Hangout. You'll get to my page. Sign up for my newsletter also, which comes out monthly. Thanks, everybody, for listening in on the Happiness Hangout. We'll see you next time. Have a great day.
Hi, this is your host, Lori. Want to get more happiness? Check out all the free readings, activities, and my blog at my website. Want to learn how to deal with life's challenges from your positive core? Check out Empowering Yourself to Happiness class, done totally online. You can find it all at www.happinesshangout.net. www.happinesshangout.net. Come explore and feel better wherever you are. This is Lori Peters with the Happiness Hangout. I provide presentations on happiness and well-being to businesses, schools, and anyone involved in wellness and professional days. Check out tons of free resources and activities also at my website, www.happinesshangout.net. Feel better wherever you are. Help us grow the Happiness Hangout Show. Become a sponsor. Businesses and nonprofits, get your info out there to thousands of my listeners all over the world for just pennies. Individuals can also sponsor one or more shows, and you get a shout out to your favorite charity. Several packages available. Come see what you get and put out there what's important to you. Go to www.happinesshangout.net. www.happinesshangout.net for more information.